T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Kingham OX.
Listen anytime, anywhere.
Get the radio.com app today.
Mr. Trump has magic about him.
This is the greatest country in the world, but we do have some really stupid people.
How can I describe our leaders better than the word stupid?
This guy has magic coming out his ears.
This is the most unethical sham.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've never known a guy more talented at untangling politics so that anyone can understand.
On KMOX.
Thank you, J.K. Simmons. I appreciate that. And let's untangle here this afternoon as we get started for a Monday edition. Ladies and gentlemen of the Mark Reardon Show, good afternoon. What a beautiful, beautiful day in St. Louis. Cloudy and rainy and cold and freezing rain. And I'm sick of it. Tired of it. Tired of this weather. But I guess we're stuck with it. I saw something today that said 5 weeks until spring. So that means, what, about 7 weeks until we get nice weather. But the end is near. The one thing that we're going to cover today, and this won't come till later, but I have to start with it just as a sports fan and, you know, a fan of football, the National Football League. I'm watching the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am over the weekend with Jim Nantz doing the coverage, and they started promoting something on Saturday when I'm watching the tournament about the Alliance of American Football or the American Alliance for Football. I have no idea. How in the world can fans, and I sent text messages to friends of mine instantaneously. Alex, who's filling in for Dave, have you ever heard of that before this weekend? Had you heard of it? You had heard of it. So I send this text. I'm like, what the hell is the American Alliance for Football? Nobody knew. But there was a game that was on CBS on Saturday night between a couple of teams. Now, I did not watch it. I actually put it in the DVR, and I was going to try to check it out. But we're going to check in with Bill Goodykoontz this afternoon. He spent the weekend watching a lot of those games. He's in Phoenix, and they have a team there, so he's going to explain it. So if there's any confusion there, and I think there might have been, we'll get you through it. I don't think CBS is going to cover games on a regular basis. I were thinking they were trying to, you know, dip their feet into the water there, see if they can get some promotion for the league. By the way, Phil Mickelson won that tournament. They had to finish it up this morning. I taped the last couple of holes on the Golf Channel because CBS had to cut out. They had a bunch of rain delays, weather delays. They had hail on that golf course. That was somebody that was doing like a snow angel. It was actually a very entertaining tournament, and they got to the 17th and 18th yesterday. Paul Casey behind Phil Mickelson by 3 shots, and they finished up the 2 holes this morning, and Phil won. Although Casey and his partner, the guy that's, I think, the CEO from FedEx, won the amateur leg of that tournament. But I was paying attention to a lot of politics over the weekend, and we have at least 2 more official candidates for Democratic presidential hopefuls. We had Hiawatha over the weekend get in this race officially.
The middle class squeeze is real, and millions of families can barely breathe. It is not right. When it comes to climate change, our very existence is at stake. Stop handing out enormous tax giveaways to rich people and giant corporations.
So this is what you're going to get from Hiawatha and the rest of them as we move forward. First of all, we're in the best economy perhaps in history, with unemployment at record lows and wage growth at perhaps record highs. But it doesn't matter to Hiawatha or Amy Klobuchar or any of these other Democrats. They're going to try to get you to believe, and by the way, with the media, who will be complicit, that somehow this is terrible economic times. Now, I've warned you about this for years. You go back to the Obama administration, and I remember seeing these little tiny stories on page 8A or 9A of the Post-Dispatch or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal about the economy and how terrible it was doing at the time. And if you ever had any kind of negative numbers from the Obama administration, well, they were buried deep in the paper. They wouldn't, you know, flash them up on CNN or any of the other networks on the scroll. They basically give him a pass. It was all George W. Bush's fault. Let's not forget that. 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, still George W. Bush's fault. What about 2013? Well, still George W. Bush's fault. 2014, 2015. You know, the last six quarters, Andy Puzzer is going to come on this afternoon. He wrote about this in a column over the weekend about how this economy has taken us from stagnation to boom. And it's a story that needs to be told. And it's a story that is not being told right now because you'd have to dig deep to find it. But the average GDP for the last six quarters of the Obama presidency, when, of course, it was still George W. Bush's fault, was 1.5%. We've doubled that right now. That's pretty good news. You'd never know it if you heard from Elizabeth Warren. And here's the other, let me see if this is the soundbite that was on Meet the Press yesterday from Hiawatha. So, a little bit along the same lines of what you heard in the rally. If I can get it to play here we go.
I am tired of hearing that we can't afford to make real investments in childcare, college, and Medicare for all. I'm tired of hearing that we can't afford to make investments in things that create economic opportunities for families. I'm tired of hearing what we can't afford because it's just not true.
How do we not have economic opportunities for families when there's like 1.5 million jobs in this country right now that you can't even fill? So what more economic opportunity for families do you need right now? So then you have Senator Michael Bennett, who is from Colorado. He's a Democrat. He's on with Chuck Todd Meet the Press yesterday. Chuck Todd plays Hiawatha's soundbite. He responds.
Well, first of all, I'm tired of hearing all that stuff, too, that Elizabeth said. I completely agree with her. Think about what we've done since 2001. We've cut taxes by $5 trillion. Almost all of that went to the wealthiest Americans.
I'll tell you what, I hate it when people get to keep more of their hard-earned money. That is one thing. I'm with the Democrats on that one. I want to take more money from your paychecks. And even though the rate, you know, if you just do simple math, if you're making $50,000, you're making $100,000, making $150,000, if you make more money, you're going to pay more in taxes. So do you get more relief? Well, I guess mathematically you do. But it's just another one of those class warfare games that they like to play. I'd love to see these guys, all of them. You know, Amy Klobuchar got in today. Campaign next year on extreme abortion positions and tax increases, and see how that turns out for them.
We've spent $5.6 trillion, the president says $7 trillion, on wars in the Middle East. So that's $11, $12, $13 trillion that we did not spend to address the most important issue facing this country, which is our lack of economic mobility and the huge income inequality that we have. So I actually agree with all of that.
Let's focus on that last part there. Listen to what he said. Michael Bennett, Colorado Senator, Democrat.
The most important issue facing this country, which is our lack of economic mobility.
How do we have lack of economic mobility when, again, we have a booming economy? This is what always confuses me about the Democrats. What exactly is it that they want to do? What is it, if you're a Democrat, that you want from them? Well, I guess you want taxes raised on the wealthy, even though raising taxes on the wealthiest Americans won't even begin to scratch the surface of, you know, the Green New Deal or whatever nonsense that is, or Medicare for all, or all the things that are involved. And, you know, I love the fact also that the Democrats are so offended by the socialism word, the S word, when that's exactly what they're prescribing. So then you have Katie Turr from Meet the Press, who's one of the lefty members of the liberal media that's on MSNBC all the time. And she wrote a book about Donald Trump, and she hates Donald Trump. But I love, because this is very representative. This was on the panel of Meet the Press yesterday. Very representative of where her ilk and where the Democrats are on these issues.
The reports aren't just, hey, it's going to get
bad. Let me set this up just a little bit here, just a little bit more. Because what they, what she's talking about in particular is climate change and how climate change will affect everything.
The reports aren't just, hey, it's going to get bad. The reports are people will die. Millions and millions and millions of people will die. And I think that there is an appetite among voters out there, especially Democratic voters and potentially swing voters, to say, hey, let's do something about this now because it's going to affect our future. And there's real economic damage that can happen as well. Billions of dollars in economic damage from crops to deaths to losing oceanfront homes and businesses in over the next century.
Oh my God. Oh my God, Katie. Millions and millions of people are going to die. There's going to be no fish in the ocean. Nothing will exist here in the next 100 years unless we get the Paris Climate Accord. Oh yeah, and that won't make a difference either. We already know that from some of the leading extreme global warming, climate change alarmists. They'll tell you that, but it doesn't matter. So where do we go from here? Well, apparently, Katie Turr and the rest of the Democratic field for president and the rest of the media want you to believe that the Green New Deal, where you would eliminate most air travel, I think that'd be interesting to take the canoe to my vacation in Kauai, right? Take the canoe or the yacht, I don't know, whatever. I guess just rich people would be able to get there, nobody else. So we want to eliminate most carbon-producing energy sources in this country, even though that, again, would do no bit of good. So she wants to talk about the millions of people who would die. Even though you have millions of people on this planet right now in poor countries and underdeveloped nations that don't have access to clean energy, to energy at all, to no energy. So they're starving. They don't have resources. Don't you think that they'd like to have access to energy? What about the poor people in North St. Louis, in Chicago, in Los Angeles, in Farmington, Missouri? What about those people and the ability for them to heat their homes while they're trying to feed their families? What effect would those policies have on you? Well, it doesn't matter because the planet won't be here in 100 years. We got to do something now. So screw the people who live here right now. It doesn't matter. It's their fault. It's their fault for not paying attention 30 years ago when Al Gore was making ridiculous claims about the environment that still haven't come true. Wasn't their fault that in the 1970s, when there were real ridiculous claims made about where the Earth would be right now in history that were completely proven false and have been fake news for years, doesn't matter. We got to do something now that's going to affect your family and how much you're going to pay for energy. We don't want you traveling anywhere. We don't want you taking an airplane trip. We got to do something. Even though this country, by the way, has led the way in decarbonization, mainly because of fracking above China and India, it doesn't matter. None of that matters. We got to lead the way. We have to do something, and we have to put economic hardship. You want to talk about economic hardship? This is what's interesting. Katie Turr, where is the real economic hardship coming from? The tax cuts that President Trump and the Republicans gave to working Americans, or the carbon taxes and the energy policies of the Green New Deal and your entire party? And don't tell me that AOC and Elizabeth Warren are on the fringes of their party. Michael Bennett agrees with them. He's a moderate from Colorado. Howard Schultz, well, he's called them out just a little bit for the nonsense, but on the environmental stuff, they're all together. They never want to talk about how this affects people that are living on the planet right now. They only want to talk about the sky is falling, Chicken Little scenarios. It's utterly ridiculous, and it will continue. And the thing that concerns me, I don't care if the AOCs, the Elizabeth Warrens, the Amy Klobuchers, getting into this race this morning, Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota.
The people are on our side when it comes to climate change. They believe in science. We can't get there,
there we go,
if people can't afford their health care.
All right, so the only thing that matters, that's the first thing out of her mouth, is climate change. Go to an average voter in Minnesota, in Illinois, in Wisconsin, in Missouri. Ask them what's first and foremost on their mind. They're not going to say climate change. Even the young socialists probably wouldn't say that.
And that means getting to universal health care. I am not afraid to stand up to the gun lobby and put universal background checks and common sense gun legislation into law.
Yeah, it's always common sense gun legislation into law, right? That's the only thing that we're talking about there. Something weird. Let me see here. Something weird is happening with my audio, and I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't hearing things in a way that you guys weren't hearing things, because I was very confused. Could be a Monday, though. Could be a Monday thing because my ears are different. Anyway, we got to take a break. Selena Zito is going to be with us this afternoon. Andy Puzner, who should have been Commerce Secretary, of course, used to run CKAU Restaurants, and he went to WashU and spent a lot of time here in St. Louis. We'll talk with Chris Kerber this afternoon. How about the Blues hot streak continued over the weekend? So a lot to get to, including a cut of the day. Selena Zito is a columnist for the Washington Examiner. She's also written some great books on Donald Trump and was way ahead of the field on Trump's election in 2016, really dialing into the demographics and the blue-collar voters in her state, Pennsylvania, but also Michigan and Wisconsin. And she's got some real interesting and, I think, accurate takes and analysis of the extreme abortion bills and how that might affect things next year. She's coming up next. I have a story that actually shows that there was a murder in New York City where they changed the charges because there was a baby that was killed, but they couldn't charge the guy with murder with the baby because of the new extreme abortion law in New York, which is, I think, one of many things that's going to happen as a result of that. Look, Salita Zito wrote about this. She did a great book. I think it's the definitive book on what happened in 2016 called The Great Result, Revolt. Some people might say result, inside the populist coalition reshaping American politics. And she has written about this extreme abortion issue and the effect. I know that many of you out there, if you're pro-choice, maybe you don't have a comprehension of how these bills in Virginia and in New York and elsewhere will affect your wishes to take back the White House. But I think Selena's onto something. How are you, Salita Zito?
I'm swell. How are you?
You know, there's just been several things in the past few months. Brett Kavanaugh was one of them, these Covington Catholic kids, and then just the absolute horrific nature of these late-term abortion bills. But not only that, and this is what sort of interested me because you wrote about this, the reaction and the coverage, maybe I shouldn't be surprised, by the national media of those particular infanticide bills.
I think that sort of paying attention to what has happened with the Democratic Party since January 27th, that you aren't understanding how dramatically things have changed to benefit not only the Republican Party, but also President Trump, in the way not only that Democrats have handled issues, but also in the issues that are rolling out that are clearly important to them for 2020. So we're talking about how they view abortion in the third trimester, but also on economic issues such as the New Green Deal, which would essentially...
Sorry, I can't help but laugh. Sorry.
I mean, we'll become cavemen and women.
Yes.
And that's pretty much sums it all up. I've never seen something take us so far backwards. It reminds me very much of 2006 and between 2006 and 2009, where the Democrats took power in the House and the Senate, and then they took the White House. And I say this all the time in that Washington keeps misreading our votes. We keep sending them a message, and they keep misreading it. And the Democrats believe that we wanted more government and that we wanted the government to do more, and that's why we voted for them. It's not. It's not at all. It's just we were unhappy with the Republicans and how they dealt with things. So in 2006 through 2009, they believed their majorities were because the people wanted more government. And I don't know if anybody remembers cap and trade. It seems like 300 years ago.
Sure.
But the New Green Deal is sort of cap and trade, like Frankenstein
on steroids.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not one reason a swing voter voted to put the Democrats in power. And it's astonishing me that they believe it and that the 2020 contenders are rapidly embracing it.
Now, when it comes to the abortion issue, because I've been in this business in talk radio for 30 years now. You know, I've been talking about these issues for that long, the gun rights issues, abortion issues. There was a part of me, and I'm pro-life, but there was a part of me that's sort of willing to put some of this behind me. Until you have the Democrats introducing bills like New York and Virginia for late-term abortion. And I'm just stunned sometimes, and I think you are too, at the disconnect between some of these Democratic leaders and maybe even the members of their party who are cheering this on in a sickening fashion and just ordinary voters where you are in Pittsburgh or here in Missouri.
Well, I don't know if you saw my story yesterday in the Washington Examiner, where I interviewed Joe Manchin, and he just found it appalling. And he took both Northam and Cuomo, the Virginia governor and the New York governor in their for Northam, the proposed bill, and for Cuomo, the signed bills. He just really took them to task for that. This is the senator from West Virginia. But, you know, Democrats in Washington, off the record, tell me, well, this is coming to a blue state near you. If there is a blue state governor, these types of bills are going to be popping up all over the place because they believe that because of Trump's appointments of conservative justices or jurists to the courts, that Roe v. Wade is at risk, and they are putting these up as sort of barriers to that possibility. So I think we're not done being stunned.
Yeah, but you think that this is going to, and look, for those people who don't know, and Celine's been on many times, as I mentioned at the beginning, you had your, you know, finger on the pulse of what was happening in this country with the blue-collar voters in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, when it came to Donald Trump's election in 2016. So they think that this is going to fire up their base, I guess, but there could be repercussions next year when it comes to the presidential race.
You're not going to win over a Midwest state voter, even someone that is a Democrat, on a new Green Deal and third trimester abortions. These voters are culturally conservative, and these types of progressive pushes to the furthest left of their party is going to alienate those voters. You're going to see one of two things happening. They're either not going to show up to vote if they didn't in 2016, or they're going to be persuaded to vote Republican in 2020. And I am astonished at this moment that reporters are not picking up on this. You are going to see stories here and there that will show you a coal miner who doesn't like Trump anymore, and or a steel worker that doesn't like Trump anymore, or an evangelical voter who doesn't like Trump anymore. And that's going to be the story that my profession is going to carry into the 2020. But I believe those are more anecdotal, and they are not reflective of the sentiments out here.
So I accept the premise on all that, and I think you're right, by the way, but what about women? How much of an issue moving forward will women be for this president, because they seemingly have peeled back even further in the last couple of years?
Well, I don't think the Democrats are doing anything to help with women on their side. I mean, if all three of those gentlemen hold their seats in Virginia, and I suspect that will be the case.
Seems that way. Right.
And on abortion, if you think that a suburban woman sitting who didn't like Trump's comportment but is, you know, and voted Democrat in 2018 is going to stay, that, you know, she's not comfortable in the Democrat lane, these types of policies are going to swing her back to the Republican side.
You know, it's interesting, too. You have people out there, and I was a never-Trumper, but you got Eric Erickson today, who, and he's getting mocked by some folks, but he was a never-Trumper. He sort of maybe led the way to a certain extent with my friend and former colleague Charlie Sykes, but he already endorsed President Trump next year. I think what's happening is that you have a lot of people, and I put myself in this camp, who weren't fans of the president, fans of his personality in particular, his behavior, that have felt so much on the defensive in the aftermath of Kavanaugh and some of this other nonsense out there, that they're rallying for this president right now.
Well, the left has just been relentless in beating down their own cause. And that is what pushes people like Eric and perhaps yourself away. You just look at it and say that, well, this is not for me. This isn't good for the country. I may not love the person that's in office, but there, you know, I don't want this for my country or this for my community or for my family.
Celina Zito, always great to have you on. It's going to be fascinating to see how this thing plays out with the 125 Democrat candidates in particular.
Yes.
We thought we had a lot a couple of years ago. Good Lord.
Oh, we're going to have like eight different debates this next year, just so you know. Beginning beginning of this summer, you're going to start, the first debate will come out probably right around the Iowa State Fair.
Yep.
And it's just going to be crazy.
It is going to be crazy. Gives plenty of things to talk about for guys like me, so I like that. Selena, thanks a lot. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
I think they're going to have to do what the Republicans did. They had like the A team and then, you know, Rick Santorum, if you didn't get to a certain amount of polling, but they made it to have A, B, C, D when it comes to the debates for the Democrats. 2:32 at KMOX. We'll run down some of the things that Ralph Northam, the current governor of Virginia, who says he's not quitting, said to Gayle King on CBS coming up. I mentioned Andy Puzzer's coming up here. Should have been Commerce Secretary, but they did a hit job on him, the mainstream media, when he was nominated by the president. He's the former CEO of CKE Restaurants, which is Hardee's and Carl's Jr., and spent a lot of time here in St. Louis, went to Wash U. His book that is out is called The Trump Boom and the Left's Plot to Stop, and he really painted in a comment he did last week, well, I guess over the weekend, in very specific numbers how this economy is rolling and how it's likely not to stop. You won't believe that, though, or you won't hear that from the presidential candidates running on the other side, as you might imagine. I got a couple of pieces of audio in here that I just saw that my producer put into the hopper, and I don't know.
How about old Fred Botten?
Fred did that.
That's
right,
gentlemen.
So this is Kamala Harris on a radio show. I'm not sure which show it was. Being asked whether or not she smoked the wacky weed.
They say you oppose legalizing weed.
That's not true.
I know.
and look, I joke about it, half joking. I have my family's from Jamaica. Are you kidding me?
Have you ever smoked?
I have.
Okay.
Like and college, I inhale. I did inhale.
Okay.
It was a long time ago. But yes.
You know, at least she answered honestly, but whether it was a long time ago or not, I don't know. One of these days, I guess that question, I'd like to see that question not be that big of a deal. This is just personally, philosophically, libertarian, who cares? You know, here's my question. Do you still get wasted, you know, doing fireball shots or something like that? I think that's just as legitimate as if you ever smoked weed. Here's the other question that gets tossed out to Kamala Harris, apparently. She doesn't like it very much. Are you black enough?
So
now, before I start, it's not people on the right asking whether or not she's black enough. It's people on the left, but she makes it sound like it's people on the right.
So I was born in Oakland.
Yeah.
and raised in the United States, except for the years that I was in high school in Montreal, Canada. And look, this is the same thing they did to Barack.
Yes.
This is not new to us. And so I think that we know what they're trying to do. They're trying to do what has been happening over the last 2 years, which is powerful voices trying to sow hate and division among us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to recognize when we're being played.
Well, she can spin, certainly. But who's actually playing you, Kamala? One thing I would say, though, after that soundbite, I would be less concerned whether she's black enough or whether she's a Frenchie. If you spent some time in Montreal, that seems to be a big issue right there. All right, so let's go to Ralph Northam. The guy disappears for a week. He says he's not going to resign. We feel pretty good about ourselves here in Missouri because even though a year ago we had a mess, this is a bigger mess in Virginia. They're down to, I think, the House janitor who has not been in blackface, and he's qualified next in line to be the governor of Virginia. So it's Gayle King from CBS who gets the coveted sit down. Probably a good choice if you're thinking about sitting down with someone. You want to do a black journalist, and a woman, probably not a bad choice either. You're probably not going to get off easy in these questions. So let's get to some of the questions here from Gayle.
I was born in white privilege, and that has implications to it. And it is much different the way a white person such as myself is treated in this country.
Did you not know that you were born into white privilege?
I knew I was, Ms. King, but I didn't realize really the powerful implications of that. And again, talking to a lot of friends, that has come crystal clear to me this week. I have also learned why the use of blackface is so offensive. And yes, I knew it in the past, but reality has really set in.
But Governor, it's hard for people listening to you, an educated man at the age of 59, to say that you're just learning about the history of it. You didn't know the history, know that it was offensive before?
Well, I think we're all on a learning curve, and certainly, Ms. King, I am not the same person now at age 59 that I was back in my early 20s.
But your early 20s was 1984, not 1964.
That's right, yes.
So you would think in 1984 that this was certainly a problem back then.
You would think, but apparently not. Now, I want to go to the other question. The other question is, you know, I was he was asked, what has he learned from this? And the first thing he comes out with is white guilt.
I was born in white privilege, and that has implications to it. And it is much different the way a white person such as myself is treated in this country.
Did you not know that?
So again, I think, and she says, did you not know you were born in white privilege? I guess if you're white in this country right now, you have to feel guilty because of the circumstances, especially post-Ferguson. Because, you know, I think some of these things were not coming up. And we've had these Band-Aids ripped off that we have to have continuous conversations about, which never solve any problems whatsoever. But the one thing that is clear is that if you're white, especially a white male, I think you can maybe get away with being a white female. If you're a white male, you're done. You are toast. You are irrelevant. You are absolutely the problem of everything in this country, right? Yeah. You know, Gail, what I learned here is I should be more guilty for being white, basically, is what he said. So then she gets to, I love this part, she gets to the photo in question and then the moonwalk. Because now you see, if tell me if this flies from Ralph Northam. This was the original cut from that news conference a week ago Saturday.
Are you still able to moonwalk?
Inappropriate circumstances.
My wife says inappropriate circumstances.
You know, he's kind of got a smile on his face. It looked like he was getting ready to moonwalk, wasn't he?
For many of us watching, it looked like you were about to actually demonstrate the moonwalk. Were you thinking about showing off your moonwalking skills?
No, because no. I don't have those at age 59.
But well, you wanted to, but I'll tell you what, he wanted to see if you still had them.
I will tell you, Gail, I regret that. This is a serious moment.
It's very serious.
And whether it was a nervous laugh or whatever, it was inappropriate.
So you weren't thinking about doing it when you looked over at the floor? You were not thinking about doing a moonwalk?
No.
Many people credit Pam, your lovely wife, for stepping in at that
point. Let me just
another
tell
reason
you,
to be nicer on Valentine's Day for you, sir.
Gail, let me just tell you that, as we say, I married way up, and I would not be sitting here having this conversation if it wasn't for my wife of 33 years.
Okay, come on. Come on, Ralph. You were going to moonwalk. Why don't you just be honest? You're being honest about all this other stuff, right? Apparently, now he's being honest about it. And you can't tell everyone that you were going to moonwalk because you were going to moonwalk, and it would have been epic, and we really, really wish that you would have. This is getting a lot of attention today when he said this.
If you look at Virginia's history, we're now at the 400-year anniversary. Just 90 miles from here, in 1619, the first indentured servants from Africa landed on our shores in Old Point Comfort, what we call now Fort Monroe. And while
also known as slavery.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so she did not like the fact that he used indentured servants, and that's becoming an issue on social media today. And it's a matter of semantics. I'm not going to sit here and explain it all to you because I don't think people really care. I think this goes back and forth. I mean, if you want to dial down to the specific definition of what he was talking about, he's not inaccurate, but that comes off, I guess, as offensive because you're referring to it as indentured servants as opposed to slavery.
I marvel that you're still standing when so many people have said, you got to go and you got to go now. I'm thinking either he's got a lot of confidence or he's just a little crazy.
Well, I know in my heart who I am and I know what I can do. And Virginia right now needs a leader that's strong, that has courage, and that can take us to the next level. And I can do that.
You might have to convince people that you're still the right leader for this job. You have a lot to do.
I have a lot of work to do, but I will do everything that I can to regain Virginia's trust.
You know, it's interesting. The polls came out over the weekend. It was like split right down the middle, 47-47, and the rest sort of, I guess, undecided about whether or not he should resign. So look, in the last week, the governor, his team, they're looking at that. He's only a one-term governor anyway. He's got a couple of years left. I think he's going to ride it out. And he was asked, why should you stay? Why do you deserve to stay?
So after Saturday, the drumbeat started beating immediately about he needs to go. He needs to go by people in your own party, by some of the top Democratic leaders in the country, by some of your constituents who were protesting outside your home. And after that happened, you thought what?
I thought, first of all, I've heard a lot of people, not only in Virginia, but in this country. But I also know that I was elected to be the governor of Virginia. People had faith and confidence in me. And we've had a great first year. We've expanded health care to over 400,000. We've dealt with criminal justice reform. We've raised the felony larceny.
All right, so he's going blah, blah, blah. These are the issues and what is important. There was one other part here that he was talking about the blackface thing and dressing up as Michael Jackson, which, by the way, I don't know if anyone's ever told Ralph Northam or this is or should be pretty apparent that Michael Jackson in 1984 is probably whiter than Ralph Northam is today, right? So a little confusing why shoe polish was needed, but it was.
You know, the other thing that struck people in the news conference is when you were talking about Michael Jackson and you said, you know, because many people know it's hard to remove shoe polish from your face. And I'm thinking, A, how do you know that?
Yeah.
Because it implies that you certainly put shoe polish on your face on more than one occasion. How do you know that it's difficult to remove?
Well,
I didn't know that.
When I dressed up as Michael Jackson, I put some shoe polish on my cheeks on both sides. You also, or not you, but folks need to know that I went to military school, military college for 4 years. I polished my shoes almost every day. We did that with what we call a spit shine rag. It's a very thin piece of cloth. And the shoe polish.
My dad used to do that,
yeah. Yes. And the shoe polish goes through that cloth and it gets on your finger or my finger and it's very difficult to remove. So that's why I know shoe polish is difficult.
So that's what you were referring to.
That's correct.
Okay.
There you go. Ralph Northam, he's hanging in there. He's not going anywhere in Virginia. Meantime, Justin Fairfax isn't going anywhere and the Attorney General is not going anywhere. Actually, he was asked about Fairfax and whether or not he should resign, too. Here's what he said.
I can only imagine that it must take tremendous courage for women to step forward and talk about these things that just are so hurtful. And these accusations are very, very serious.
I love that. This is a lot more serious than me, okay? You're going to put the sexual assaulter in office if I resign. That can't happen.
At this time, do you think he should resign?
That's going to be a decision that he needs to make.
I know he needs to make it, but what do you think? Do you
well,
think
again,
he...
I want the truth to come out. I certainly support an investigation.
What a mess, and I encourage it to continue in Virginia because it gives us a lot of material. It's 2:48 at K. So my regular producer, Dave Klein, he was out still this week. This is week number 3, is on paternity leave, must feel guilty or something, sitting around with those babies. He sent me this one from the weekend, and I think he got put up on Channel 5's website. The headline being, not your typical obituary, I finally have the smoking hot body I have always wanted, having been cremated. There is a woman in Baysville, Ontario, a Canadian family penned a hilarious obituary for their mother after she passed away that has taken the internet by storm. Some of you might have heard this. It was written in the first person as it was their 81-year-old mother, Sybil Hicks, and made some jokes about family members. It claimed she was thrilled to finally have the smoking hot body that she's always wanted because she was cremated. It was a piece that ran in the classified section, referred to her husband as a horse's ass. That might be something very common with wives who die. It also claims that she tolerated her children over the years, mentioning which one was her favorite, and called out her youngest for refusing to eat homemade turkey soup because he didn't want to be alert looking for bones while he ate. It's actually a pretty funny obituary and some pictures involved as well. It said, it hurts me to admit it, but I, Mrs. Ron Hicks from Baysville, have passed away. I pass peacefully with my eldest daughter, Brenda, by my side. February 2nd, 2019, I leave behind my loving husband, Ron Hicks, who I often affectionately refer to as horse's ass. I also left behind my children, whom I tolerated over the years, Bob with Carol, my oldest son, my favorite, Brian with Jeanette, who was the Oreo cookie favorite, Brenda, a.k.a. Hazel, who would run to clean the bathrooms whenever she heard company was coming, Barbara, with Gordon, the ever Miss Perfect, and finally, baby Bruce, who wouldn't eat a homemade turkey soup because he didn't want to be alert looking for bones while he ate. I will miss seeing my sweetest grandchildren, Caitlin, Megan, Joel, Isaac, Mason, Rachel, Annie, the list goes on, grow up to be the incredible people they are meant to be. I graduated from Waterdown High School with honors while wearing my shiny, bright saddle shoes. I later graduated from Hamilton General Hospital School of Nursing. So there you go. A unique obit from Sybil Marie Hicks. I wrote a column because I am forced to write a column every week here for KMOX.com, and I think I do it 75% of the time. Sometimes I like doing it, but I did write a column on the Covington Catholic kids. You know, we had the attorney from, well, I don't think he's with L. Linwood Attorneys, but he's the other attorney from down in Kentucky who is helping Nick Sandman and the Covington Catholic kids with their lawsuits. You know, people who have wronged them over the course of the last few weeks in the media coverage. And the one that they're going to go after in particular, as I explained in the column and, you know, went off on last week, is Nathan Phillips, who is a despicable, despicable piece of human debris. This so-called American, Native American hero who lied about virtually everything in association with that particular incident. But what's interesting is, and I'll get into this a little bit after the top of the hour, the reaction. Now, I often don't do this. A lot of times, well, most of the time, I don't look at comments. I sometimes have enough time or don't even have enough time to look at Twitter when something really lights up Twitter that I say, and you get dozens, if not hundreds, of responses. So it's hard to go through the feed and see all the comments. And I've actually disciplined myself relatively well over the years to not reply to all those things or the emails or anything like that. But in this particular case, somebody tagged me on Facebook, and we put these things up on Facebook on the KMOX page, and I made the mistake of reading the comments. And some of the comments just were hilarious because they were so wrong. I mean, like factually wrong, trying to challenge me on things that weren't even debatable. And we'll get into that in the next hour. I'll have those for you. Also, the Blues are red hot. I saw Chris Kerber in here earlier today. He's going to join me at 3:35. I think he might be on the phone because he may have had to take off. But that is an amazing 6-game winning streak, and this team looks completely different than it did just a month ago. So Kerb's going to join us at 3:30 this afternoon. I mentioned at the beginning of the show the Alliance for American Football, the American Alliance for Football, whatever the situation is. I don't think people even know what to call it. The Academy of Football. What is it? Bill Goodykoontz from the Arizona Republic wrote about this, and he has some details. I had never even heard of it. No idea what it was. Bill's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, plus an audio cut of the day right before 4 o'clock as well. It's all still to come here on the Mark Reardon Show, second hour coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.